NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
And that's 1-800-BYDESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined as always by our beat reporters, Tom Timmerman and Jim Thomas. Well, JT, it's going to be our last podcast before the trade deadline. And as always, we're going to start with the looking at the blue line. What's the assessment? Marco Scandella comes back, jumps right in, shoulders a pretty big workload. Not sure he's the answer, but for the moment he is. How do we see the blue line right now?
Yeah, I think it's very much still up in the air. It's going to be a complicated deal because of the Blues cap situation, if Doug Armstrong makes one. But, Scandella played two very good games. Then I looked at the replay of his pass several times. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought at first, but still, you'd hate to be in game four of a series and have a pass like that, give up the go-ahead goal late. So I sure think Doug Armstrong is looking. Again, if something will something happen, I'm not sure, because you've got to free up some cap room. And who do you trade? Granted, you can put Sundquist on LTIR, but Sundquist told Tommy and Luke Korek and myself yesterday that he feels pretty good, and he thinks, you know, he's going to be pretty good from here on out. So a little more suspenseful, I would say, than the last couple of trade deadlines.
Yeah, they would, I'm sure, love to add a body on defense, but as how it's going to work. And the only way it works is if you trade Marco Scandella. I mean, that's the only way you clear enough space to make something happen, because you can trade other guys that are making the minimum, but that doesn't help you bring in someone. The Blues don't have any accumulated cap space to work with. So unless there's an incredibly generous GM out there who thinks that they can either the change of scenery works for Marco Scandella or something, I don't see where the cap space comes from. The next option is hired goons to, break someone's leg or something to create LTIR space. And that could be a CBA problem. So probably
I'm shocked that you would suggest that.
Yeah. The Oscars declaration that I'm not dead yet, as in the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, telling the world that don't put me in the warehouse for the last quarter of the season and bring me back for the playoffs. Because it certainly was, that did seem like everybody was thinking the same thing. Well, he's got kind of this nagging problem. Only rest will help. That's a fix. And he hasn't been playing to his usual level. He could use the downtime and then, recharge in the playoffs. It was all making sense until he decided to feel better.
And it could still happen. The issue is now what? We just have two games now. You just wonder how that knee is going to hold up after this little bit of a pause, and they continue those three games in 4 days and every other day, actually a little more than every other day down the stretch. But maybe a team would pick up some cap space, but then you'd have to give up more. And again, unless it's Scandella, who do you move? People say, well, Costin, maybe Jake Walman. I don't know how attractive a trade piece Klim Costin is right now down in Springfield of, the AHL. And, Walman has shown some stuff lately. But, again, if you're – we're thinking the Blues are looking for a – top four left defenseman. I don't think Jake Walman alone is going to do that for you.
Yeah, Costin could be a piece, but the fact right now he doesn't even get you any cap space if you trade him because he's in the minors. If you think who off this roster otherwise could you trade? you know, do the Blues say, we're getting a lot out of Ivan Barbashev this year, but this isn't what he's going to be every year? Could Barbashev be, a trade piece? I mean, this is coming out of left field, but this might be the best year we see out of Ivan Barbashev. If you traded him, would you be trading at a high point? On the other hand, he's a guy that's, going to score 20 goals this season. So, that might not be something you want to take out. And because of how it all fits together, is that taking a vital component out of the team? But that's a guy that would get you some space and maybe down the road isn't going to be instrumental in your plans. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's a fair question. We've brought his name up just in terms of the long term. Where is it going? When he gets to that next contract, you're always looking ahead to the next one. And for now, he's certainly a good component and a key guy with your chemistry. On the other hand, it kind of gets to another topic that was hit this week in our coverage. Ivan doesn't win any faceoffs. He is a supporting cast guy. He scores some. He's been put in a position to score, and he has. But ultimately, the next deal is going to be more expensive than the current one, and you're going to have to allocate more money on the blue line, you'd think, maybe, unless you just can change parts. So, it is interesting. I mean, there's all the and Sundquist will be the same thing going forward as well, right? Because he's not the same player he has been. So, these are a couple of guys you're thinking about, and because otherwise you've got so many guys playing at a pretty good level, JT up front, where it's not like you can just find guys that you could say, well, that's an obvious target, because too many guys are playing well.
Yeah, and I really don't think and we've been stunned before. Well, at least largely surprised on Tarasenko. I don't think that's any kind of a issue now, not with the team contending. You know, if and maybe you guys disagree, I think if he's moved, they wait till the off season. But Barbashev, Sundquist, Tyler Bozak's no trade clause expired on this 1 year deal, March the 6th. It's not going to give you much cap relief. And two, all due respect, I don't know what team might be looking for Tyler Bozak. He just has had trouble with his fourth line role. He just hasn't produced a whole lot. So otherwise, you're going to give up. You're going to have to give up some goals to somewhere to get a defenseman. And again, you look around and who do you want to get rid of? Well, it's certainly not Kyrou or Thomas. You just signed Buchnevich and Saad, and they're producing. Tarasenko's producing. Perron has come alive. Shen has come alive. O'Reilly is doing better, although maybe not at his at his typical point scoring pace. So, where does the trade come from? Logan Brown, I don't think anyone's going to maybe be too excited about that. So it's not the easiest of spots that Doug Armstrong is in. And when I talked to him about this, it was right near the end of the All-Star break. He said that he didn't necessarily think there would be maybe a lot of moves just because of the fact that not just the Blues, but, half the league is at or very near the cap, and that it may take a three-way deal, and we don't see many of those. What do we see? One or two of those a cycle. So I know fans love playing the fantasy trade it's not an uncomplicated, that's a double negative, but it's a complicated proposition for Dougie Armstrong.
Yeah. And, you say, some guy's got to come out of the lineup. If they make that trade defensively, it's Scandella or Mikula or Bortuzzo. And I think Mikula, if they acquire a defenseman, they almost have to trade away a defenseman because then they just have too many of them. So at that point, but Mikula is a guy that you think can be really good that they're going to build around. So he's not going to be out there. Scandella is the one that makes sense, but again, how is that trade going to work? And you're going to have to give away some other some really other intriguing or attractive components to make someone want to take Marco Scandella in that contract.
Yeah, and it's and for although it's high, it's relatively high cost depth. You're also value veteran depth on the blue line heading into the postseason. So while you would like to upgrade for Marco and find somebody more consistent to play the bigger minutes, you also are mindful that you need to have some depth. Again, not at that cost. If somebody could trade you, there's a way to have somebody just absorb some of Marco's money and yet leave Marco on the team. I guess that's not allowed. That would be helpful just because he would be a valuable guy to keep if he wasn't at that price that he's preventing, that prevents you to do something else. So yeah, it's all very interesting to see how this plays out at the trade deadline. Another team, guys, did make a move, Colorado, which is a team in absolute go for it mode. And it needs to be, because at some point they're not, that franchise is going to have to pay a lot of guys a lot more money, but for the moment, they can make moves. They add Manson on defense, filling a need there. And then, you know, to make the cap numbers, to keep the cap flexibility, they trade away a skilled guy that hasn't quite cracked the top six as they hoped in Yost, and they get a more of a supporting cast checking type guy in Sturm and then with the Wild, and the Wild adds a little skill and subtracts a little bit of checking, and that certainly helps the Wild. So that kind of gives you an idea, JT, about how these sort of things have to work. Teams, but they had flexibility. Colorado had some flexibility.
Yeah, just enough to make it happen. Now, the other facet with the Blues you could talk about, is there a way, and again, you still have to create the cap space, but maybe if a team in any kind of move agrees to eat some of the cap space, I'm sure teams are looking at Jake Neighbors, although Jake's had a fine season, tremendous season with the Oil Kings in the Western Hockey League, but he's been hurt lately. He's been out like 8 games with an upper body. And he's the first round pick from 2020. The first round pick from 2021, Zachary Bolduc, just as David Perron predicted when Bolduc got set down, he said he needs to go down there and tear up the Quebec League. And he's just killing it in the queue. He's got like 32 goals and 44 games. And since the league, the queue had about a month and a half right around the holidays, a little after COVID pause. But since like the beginning of February, he's scoring like more than a goal a game. So do you dip into one of those two guys? I would kind of doubt it, but you never know. And another guy, Perunovic, who's hurt, but and certainly out for this year, but maybe a team might be interested in him going forward too. And I still think the Blues are pretty high on Perunovic, and you know, unless it's an offer that some kind of thing that is really enticing to them, I don't think they're willing to do that. So if there's a way, we know Doug Armstrong will find it, but this is not going to be an easy one.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of those prospects, for Perunovic or for Neighbors or for Bolduc, it's got to be a trade that you think is going to make a big difference in this team, that this is going to be the difference between, you know, this makes you an actual Stanley Cup contender, that this is going to get you past Colorado. You know, you don't do it for a depth trade. In Colorado, you know, with their trades, the other byproduct is they've got cap space now. They can still go out and make another trade. They're now back in the Giroux mix because they've got the cap space to make that happen.
When you look at another possibility that was much discussed, and I think it was more of a possibility for any team beyond this season, the much discussed Jacob Chychrun, he gets hurt, and that's not helpful. I think that was always going to be something if for the Blues or anybody else that might be a way to reconfigure your blue line for the next few years, because he has term on his contract at a fairly team friendly rate if he's a good player, which, you know, for much of this year that was an issue. But he gets hurt right before the trade deadline, so that kind of changes the dynamic. You can't make a trade for a guy that's going to miss a bunch of time before the playoffs start unless you'd feel like well, we got a great team. We just want a guy for the playoffs. And again, JT, that seems like more of a guy that would be, it's kind of pushing, I think almost pushes him to the offseason.
Yeah, especially if it's closer to that month than the 2 weeks. Supposedly it's two to four week deal. And, you know, especially since Bill Armstrong, the former Blues executive, apparently he's asking for, you know, the moon and the stars for him. Can he still do that? So, yeah, you kind of think Chychrun would be out of the mix. And Jeff, you have a better feel for this than I. I mean, the Ben Chiarot is a guy that the Blues, by all appearances and all accounts, have been looking into. I mean, is the asking price, how high is the asking price for him? And, you know, I don't know who else is out there. You hear there, Travis is it Sanheim from the Flyers. You've heard his name come up. But again, as Tom pointed out, at what price do you give up unless you think this is going to really be a significant improvement for your club?
And the other question is going to be is, because we saw it when you go back to when they traded Paul Stastny, is this a team that they think can win the Stanley Cup? What, you know, is this part of their window? Do they need to strike now? Are they better suited in a following season? You know, how worth it is it right now, especially when you've got a powerhouse Colorado team that's loading up? Do you say, we think we, I mean, in your heart of hearts, you have to say, are we going to beat Colorado? And it's the NHL playoffs. Anything can happen, but, you know, Colorado is going to be 15 points better than the Blues in the final standings.
You know, it kind of speaks to the other issue we've talked about the, how the team's has been transitioning to a different nucleus. You know, now it's a nucleus with, you know, Kyrou and Thomas, particularly on the offensive of end. And then you've got a couple of D men that you're committed to that are going to be with you for a while, a trio of D men that are going to be part of your deal going forward here. So you have a nucleus that's got some term to it and that's building towards something. And so to your point earlier, you know, Bolduc and Neighbors, they can definitely fit into some of this. And we've talked about who ends up not being in the group. Well, guys like Barbashev and Sonny, as they start getting more expensive and the decision on Perron and all this. So yeah, it is the team's in an interesting place, you know, and you're going to want to keep Husso, and that's not going to be in it. That's going to cost. That's going to cost you money for sure. I think generally speaking, it would make more sense to hold on to everything, but maybe if there's a surprise move, does somebody take Bennington at the trade deadline and you run with Husso and you take all that cap money and do something? I don't know. I never put anything past Armstrong, but he'll have to make a decision at some point in goal. But I'm kind of leaning more like to just, you know, ride it out and keep building.
Yeah. Yeah. The sense I got in talking to some people inside the building, I'll say, when they were there, what was it, about a week or 2 weeks ago, and they had their organizational meetings with all the personnel and all the scouts in, this person came out of that room thinking, and again, things could have changed dramatically from there, that they would probably do that, Jeff Gordon, and just stand pat. Now, that was before the road trip to New York City and those losses. So I don't know how that may have changed anything. And just in my history, the only time, and it seems like in most trade deadlines and even most trades, that Armstrong usually goes big or he doesn't go at all, you know. Stastny, that team was in a free fall. I think they'd lost seven in a row, or were winless in seven in a row. And he didn't think, even if they squeaked into the playoffs, which ultimately they didn't, he didn't think they would go anywhere. Now, Scandella was maybe about a week before the trade deadline, 10 days, but that was caused by Jay Bomeister's cardiac episode. And then really the last couple of years, really just really kind of minor moves at the deadline. So yeah, I would not be stunned, if, if the trade deadline came and went and the Blues just committed to the roster. Doug Armstrong is very, I don't know, kind of big on chemistry. And I think he would be a guy that would think about how does this guy fit with the team. And I think he's also loyal, at least to a degree. And, their player development has, with rare exception, you know, Klim Kostin hasn't developed, but, you know, you look at players like Kyrou and Thomas, and okay, they were highly touted, but even a guy like Mikula, who we didn't know a whole lot about, and then Husso, I mean, their patience with these guys has played off. And now finally, and Tom with his analytics, Ben says Jake Walman analytically looks really good. So maybe their patience with Walman is finally paying off.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we're going to see a Ryan Miller-esque trade. Ryan Miller, the goalie, not Ryan Miller, the assistant general manager deal coming up in the next week, at least with the Blues.
No, that didn't work out. They took a swing. They weren't comfortable in goal. They ended up being uncomfortable in goal afterward. It just, the fit wasn't there for the group, to say the least. You know, just on some other topics, it was interesting, and it really is the utter futility of what happened in overtime the other day spoke to two things that has been covered in the Post and Dispatch and STLtoday.com. One, you know, losing draws are, that's a bad thing, but also losing a draw to start a overtime and never getting the puck back is a bad thing. And then the OT numbers, I mean, it is pretty jarring. You know, you would think this team with a group of mobile D men and a really good supply of forwards, you know, you could roll out three groups, highly skilled groups on 3-on-3 and probably four highly skilled groups on 3-on-3. And yet this team's been terrible. I mean, it's a bit of a fluke and it's a bit of a head scratcher. And as like the Chief said, it's not something really that you can scheme out.
Yeah. They only Buffalo, our good friends in Buffalo, have been worse in the entire, league. And exactly to what you're saying, how does a team that is this good at scoring goals, the Blues have been fourth and fifth in the league all year, basically all year in goal scoring, almost at times they look almost helpless in the OTs. It's one of their worst faceoff teams it is their worst faceoff team right now in a decade, and possession is so important. But you also see, I think Berube this year is trusting the younger guys, and it's part of their overall development. Thomas and Kyrou, they're getting a lot of work on the 3-on-3 where we would rarely see them before, and they've had some glitches, you know, for skilled as they are. Just maybe it's something you just have to learn the hard way and through experience. I mean, they get caught overextending and maybe looking at the puck, maybe being a little too casual, not being as aware maybe as they should be that how important possession is and the urgency of overtime. I think a Kyrou had a very casual backward pass in Montreal in OT that was that led to a goal by Cole Caulfield, and then Thomas in New Jersey was just caught kind of puck watching and had no idea where Doug Hamilton, who's scored an overtime goal or two in his career, just came in the back door and scored. And so it's happened a few times. And then it happened the other night with Kyrou, the first of two line changes, and he goes all the way down the ice. And you know, Berube's probably screaming in his head or maybe screaming out loud, they're not going to score a goal from 200 feet away, Jordan. Just hang back a little bit. But those guys, you know, again, they're young and this is new to them. And the good thing is in the playoffs, there's no 3-on-3 format. So at least we can look forward to that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. They only have to get through 25 more games here on being able to play 3-by-3. And then it becomes a problem for next season. But as I wrote this morning, I mean, that's, you know, if they're just an ordinary team, if they are a 500 team, that's three more points they would have. And as tight as the Central Division is, you'd love to have those 3 points. That would give you, they'd be 7 points up on the guys chasing, which looks a whole lot better than 4 points. It would give them some breathing room. And as Rui pointed out, you can't really practice 3-on-3s. You go out there and you skate around and then you wait for something to happen. But it's not like you could have a system. This is how we're going to play 3-on-3s. It's like common sense stuff that you have to do. And they just have to start doing common sense stuff to win some games.
All right, one last topic here on the net front, and that is we got to make fun of somebody, right? So that somebody would be the Vegas Golden Knights, man. Everything has gone wrong for those guys. Injuries have been a huge issue right now. Mark Stone's out. Max Pacioretty's been out. Alec Martinez has been out after taking that skate in the face. He's missed the chunk of the season. The fat Robin Leonard has once again pulled some pulled or injured something. It's unfortunate. They just have had a lot of unfortunate luck, but they've also made a lot of weird decisions over time that have put them in this position, you know, going for Robin Leonard when you already had Marc-Andre Fleury, going for Alex Pietrangelo when Shea Theodore was taking off, the ghost of Evgeny Dodonov, who's just been utterly useless, making the big Jack Eichel play at the expense of Alex Tuck, who's played great in Buffalo, and also creating at some point major cap issues for you. You just could go on and on of things where they added something where they had something, and including a coaching change, and there might be another one coming. I don't know, JT, that it's sort of like they're the anti-Blues. The Blues have been, when they strike big, but generally Doug Armstrong's a pretty composed operator. He'll make a bold move, but he has a vision. JT, I don't know if there's ever been a vision with the Golden Knights. They just seem to be, every time there's a shiny new object, they lunge for it.
It's a great pregame. It's a great spectacle, but I think the party's over in Vegas. I don't think they make the playoffs this year. I think they're gonna slip right out. Every now and then, and I don't know if you guys get somebody on Twitter sends me Petro stats compared to Justin Faulk, at least this year, and Faulk are better, at least in terms of plus minus goals and assists. But Jeff, that was a pretty restrained surgical slicing and dicing of the Vegas Knights. I'm used to more venting, but, I'm impressed. Nonetheless, I'm impressed.
I could be wrong, because it's a big world out there. But I would think that within the NHL, there are a whole lot of people just taking great comfort in seeing this happen to Vegas. This is like, the people are just thinking. And it's not that they're not that they're bad people there, but it's like, finally, you have to deal with all these things that are happening. Here's your lesson to learn right now is to have, sign another guy that's making $10 million a year. Sure, we'll figure out what to do about that. And we'll keep trading away players because we'll sign the next. Yeah. So I would imagine that there was a certain level of satisfaction outside of the greater Las Vegas area.
Yeah, because they're well, for the longest time, they looked smarter than everybody, and maybe they're not as smart as we thought. They made it look easy almost.
Well, I was looking at some numbers if they had goalkeeping like Seattle has had this year, they would not have had that first year. But they had great goalkeeping from Fleury, and that's what made the first season happen. If they had Grubauer, as their goalie that year, they would not have had that success.
Yeah, I was going to say Ron Francis is one of the guys that's probably happy that they're not leading the league right now, because it's his team obviously has looked bad by comparison. But yeah, it came easily for them, and good on them, because they used the system to fleece some teams and left some hard feelings, I'm sure, during the expansion process. And then they've been aggressive poaching other people's players, which can lead to hard feelings. So, yeah, I got to think that, because they've done some things that just didn't make any whole lot of sense that would probably have caught some people by surprise because they didn't make any sense. The whole Petro thing didn't really make sense for him at all.
No.
And, now they're going to have the back end of his career to pay. And he'll end up living in St. Louis the rest of his life and all that. And he'll come back here And, you know, he'll be happy that he took the money and all that, I guess. But it just, that whole thing was just so stupid. Because, you know, Nate Schmidt's had a heck of, he's a good player. And he was a good player for them. They had to get rid of Nate Schmidt in order to make the Petro thing work. And he's not Petro. He's not Justin Falk even. But he's a good player. You know, and he was well-liked. He was a popular guy on the team. And so
did Petro cost himself a statue? Did he cost himself a statue at that 14th and Clark by leaving? Or do you think he still
gets absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think he does. He'll get, maybe he'll put one up for him in Vegas. So see how people feel about this? Hard feelings. So anyways, all right, well, this has been great. Guys, we'll be back next week after the trade deadline. We'll see, after we've tried to tamp down speculation, after we have tried to make fans be realistic approaching the big day, they'll probably make a, like a six-player trade. So
yeah,
that's how it usually works.
We'll see what happens. So, but until next time, for Jim Thomas, for Tom Timmerman, the hardworking Beat guys, I'm Jeff Gordon. See ya.